Well, hi everyone, and welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks. Today we're going to do something a little different. For years, I have been doing a program called Dementia Chats, which is about raising the voices of people living with dementia. Those have always been video interviews. They're on Alzheimer's Speaks YouTube channel on a specific playlist. They are listed on alzheimerspeaks.com, which is our main website under our free educational resources, but I've decided I'm going to start folding those into the radio show because they are loaded with information. So this show is going to be about people who have been living well with dementia over 10 years, some of them 20. So you will hear from Craig Hanke, Ginger Smith, Harry Urban, Lori Scheer, Jennifer Butte, and Truthful Loving Kindness. You will hear about when they got diagnosed, how their diagnosis has changed over the years, and how they are living life well with their form of dementia. So I know you're going to learn a lot from them. So feel free to pass this one along. And with no further ado, we'll get started with that show. Well, hi everyone, and welcome to Dementia Chats. Today we're going to have a really interesting conversation, and all of our members here are going to talk about how they are living with dementia after 10 years, especially given so many are given a diagnosis of 5 to 7. I think we're going to break some myths here and be able to teach people how to live a positive, engaged life. My own mother lived with dementia for 30 years. And, there's a lot of hope out there that I don't think is getting through. So, for those of you that don't know me, I suppose I should introduce myself too. I'm Lori LeBay, the founder of Alzheimer's Speaks. And again, I got into this industry because of my mom and feeling a lack of hope. And Dementia Chats is here to change that and really, really lift you up and give you some everyday in the trenches, real practical, skills, ideas, and insights as to living with dementia. So, we're going to go ahead and have all of our guests here on our panel, which I call our experts because they're the only ones living with the disease. They know a heck of a lot more than the rest of us. So, they're going to introduce themselves, then we're going to get on to our conversation. So, Jennifer, you want to start? And if you don't mind telling people when you were diagnosed, that would be helpful too.
I'm Jennifer Butte. I live in England across the pond. And I was diagnosed in 2009, but I thought I had it before. Now I took early retirement, and it took three consultants to agree.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Harry, how about you? You want to introduce yourself and let us know when you were diagnosed?
Yeah, my name's Harry Urban. I live in Pennsylvania. I was diagnosed around 2002 with Alzheimer's, but my diagnosis is I'm showing more signs of vascular dementia.
Okay, thank you. Lori?
I'm Lori Scheer, and I received an official diagnosis in August of 2013. But my husband and I both know that the dementia started probably 4 years before that, that I was definitely showing signs. And I live in Alabama, and this is Little Dog, my service dog. And it's great to be here. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Ginger, you want to introduce
Hi,
yourself?
I'm Ginger Smith. I live in beautiful Northern California. I've diagnosed about officially about 8 years ago, at first with Parkinson's, then it went to frontotemporal, and then it went to Lewy body, and then it kept changing, and right now it's mild cognitive impairment.
Okay, great. Thank you. And True.
Full legal name, Truthful Loving Kindness. My symptoms began dramatically in February 1999, but I was only 31 years old. And so they had to try on a lot of different possible causes for what was doing it instead of dementia. And then in 2012, I got a tentative diagnosis of dementia, but then they switched it, and now I'm still being called mild cognitive impairment, although my neurologist has recently said, you know, I agree, this is not mild cognitive impairment. And so it's up for the roller coaster again.
Great. Thank you. And Karen.
Hi, I'm Creaky Karen. I was diagnosed in 2014 with Alzheimer's, and then it was changed to unspecified symptoms of dementia. And then currently is neurocognitive disorder with probable dementia. I live in Corpus Christi, and there you have it.
Wonderful. Thank you. Craig?
Hi, my name's Craig Hankey. I'm from Wisconsin. I was diagnosed in 2014 with Lewy body dementia and Parkinson's. And that was by supposedly the second best neurologist in Wisconsin. And one of the best psychiatrists in Wisconsin agreed with her. It's been changed to MCI. The latest was last fall to MCI with Lewy body traits. But looking back, I can go back to 2006 and recognize that things started back then. So it's ever changing.
Well, I think people are going to be surprised, A, that any of you even have dementia, B, that you've been living with it for, you know, over 10 years. And then also how many of you have gone through various changes of what they say it is in terms of type of dementias as well. To me, I would have loved to have known those factors when my mom got diagnosed. It would have, I think, really changed our outlook as a family in terms of what we could expect, because we kind of walked out doom and gloom, you know, from the doctor's office. Did anybody here feel kind of uplifted and supported when they got their diagnosis in terms of information given to them? I'm seeing a lot of shaking heads. So then let's go. Oh, go ahead, Craig.
No, in fact, it was quite the opposite. I think it was 3 years in, I had the doom and gloom, and things weren't going well. I wasn't concentrating. I couldn't think. Beginning a lot of things, and ended up getting treated for suicidal ideations. And that was mostly because of the symptoms, terrific night terrors, hallucinations. Literally thought I was losing my mind, and it drove me to the point of, like I said, suicidal ideations. And I was treated in an inpatient for 15 days.
Okay. I think that's more common than people know, because that's something that a lot of people don't talk about, but they do in these groups much more. So I want to talk about, you know, given that situation, which I think is really common. I mean, first of all, nobody wants to get a chronic illness. I mean, that's bottom line for pretty much anybody that I know. But you want to be, and I think expect to be supported in terms of how do I live my best life. And it seems like that's one of the pieces that is still missing out of the doctor's office, you know, kind of out of the chute. Go ahead, True.
I take that back. When I got my tentative diagnosis of dementia in 2012, it was from my GP, and he was very supportive of me attending chat groups. And in fact, it got to where he would say, well, you know, I'm thinking about this medication. Why don't you talk to your friends that have had dementia, especially Lewy body symptoms, and find out how they have responded with this medication? And then we will go ahead and put it into action if others have had a positive experience with it. So in that way, my GP was very definitely supportive.
Well, that's good to hear. Jennifer?
Well, I was thrilled to bits when I got a diagnosis because I believed at long last someone believed me. And I was an educator before, involved in medical education. So when there was nothing out there to help me, it was a stimulus to me to do something about it. So I was very grateful because that helped me. I had a purpose. And I think we all need purpose and value. So that's how it went for me.
Wonderful. Ginger?
Yeah, one of the things we have is called anosognosia. I'm not pronouncing it right. But we don't realize what we have. And so even though I had worked as a speech pathologist at Stanford's neurology clinic with people with Lewy body, I didn't associate it with myself. And I think programs like you and DAA and opening up this whole information about what is dementia and all that is so important, because caregivers like help, true, that didn't help me. They didn't have that information. So when I finally realized what I had, it was such a shock.
Mm-hmm. Great. Craig?
With that, like I said, I had the second best neurologist as far as a rating in the state. She was in the Navy. She was high up on their recognition. She diagnosed me. She was fully convinced that I had Lewy body with Parkinson's. Switched insurance companies. I had to see a different neurologist. And I told him that in 2006, I was a pattern maker in a foundry. And I was making patterns that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I would make it. It would be absolutely correct, but it would be completely backwards. So this neurologist said, you don't have dementia. You have dyslexia. Didn't agree with that at all, because there is many other symptoms with that. So another neurologist, and he went back to the Lewy body without the Parkinson's. So in a way, it's good to find out what you have, but it can also send you all these mixed signals about what do I really have and what should I be doing, and then it give you medications that aren't really for the type of dementia you have, or work the opposite of what they're supposed to do.
Okay, that's good to know. Harry?
Times have changed. When I was diagnosed, I was one of the ones that the doctor gave me a pamphlet and says that the test came back indicating I have Alzheimer's. Here's a prescription, and I'll see you in 6 months. Okay, well, when I left that office, of course I thought the worst. You know, but times have changed, like I said. Now people that are diagnosed, they have people like us speaking out and telling them that, you have a degeneration of your brain, but you still have a life. You still have a life to live. And it's up to you how you live it. Now you can succumb to your disease, and who knows how long you have. Like, I have diabetes. Okay? I have asthma that sent me to the hospital twice. I have high blood pressure. I have so many other different diseases that contributes it. So you can't say, somebody can't say to me, how long do you think you have? Well, if I'm having an asthma attack, I would say hours, you know, and but on a good day, so you know, the time frame doesn't mean nothing to me.
Really about living every day. Well, let's talk about what do you think you have incorporated into your life to, get past that 10-year mark? What types of things have really helped you live well? And I'm going to go to Lori first.
Thank you, Lori. Wow, to me, when I was diagnosed, the doctor said you've got early onset Alzheimer's and FTD. And I said, well, what about my career? And he turned to my husband, not even me, and he said, get her affairs in order, spend as much time with her friends and family as you can now, and come back and take these pills and come back in 6 months and let's see how much she's progressed. Well, in October, that was 10 years ago. And yeah, I have a lot of challenges. I have a lot of limitations. But I still recognize my family most of the time, and I'm living a wonderful life. And to me, I do a lot of that. Most important thing to me is having a purpose. There's no reason to get out of bed if you don't have a reason to get out of bed. There's no reason to get dressed if there's nothing to motivate you to get dressed. We all need a purpose in life, and it could be the purpose could be as small as buttoning our own shirt or running discussion programs for a bunch of people living with dementia. Your purpose can be as big or as small as you can handle it. The second thing is staying positive. I look at some people that have been diagnosed, and even people that aren't diagnosed, but they go around the world going, oh, woe is me. Life is horrible. I have life so bad. How can you live like that? That's not living. That's just slowly dying. To me, staying positive is just, I have to live that way. And I start by, when I get up in the morning, being grateful for everything I can see. And then to me, the other thing is strategies. My husband and I have more strategies than I can tell you because they help me to stay somewhat independent. Strategies as small as the way I have the kitchen organized so I can actually find things, which changed my life because I was one of the most disorganized kitchen people you could imagine. And now, like everything has its neat little place and is in alphabetical order and whatever. But those strategies, to me, keep us going.
Those are all great, great tips. Thank you so much for that. Jennifer, how about you? What helps you, live well and full of purpose? What have you incorporated?
Well, teaching other people or helping other people, encouraging other people, inspiring other people is my passion. It's something that I found as a doctor that I did, and also, with my medical education involvement. And as you know, I've come up with this kind of thing, getting on your sledge. Those are all the things that I do. Sledge, it's the SLEDGE. So the S and the E, the beginning of it, you have to keep socially engaged. And I think it's tragic when people with dementia withdraw and shut themselves away. I mean, when I first had a diagnosis, my husband wouldn't let me go out. He was ashamed of me. And I know there are a lot of people like that. So you must keep socially engaged. The L is laughter, because I passionately believe if we have a sense of humor and we can have find joy, that helps as well. As Laurie was saying, we go around being miserable. It doesn't help, does it? So we need the laughter. So the SLE, the E is exercise, of course, because it's a fact that even moving our hands around and or walking, the exercise causes the release of endorphins in our brain, which help to make us feel better and help the neurons to kind of work better. So that's important. And the D, of course, a good diet, because if we don't, if we have too much sugar in our thing, our blood vessels, the corpuscles have too much sugar in them. They're so big they can't get through the little blood vessels in our brain, so they get blocked. Well, that's our fault. So we need to do something about that. So that's LEDG. The G is a bit of a cheat, but I couldn't remember of anything else. That's the cognitive stimulation. When we first went to school, we did reading, writing, and arithmetic. And our brain said, oh, reading, writing, and arithmetic, we need new neuronal connections to work on this because we are learning. And then we forget as we get older that if we do three different things, or reading, writing, and arithmetic together, which isn't that difficult, you know, because writing might be just crosses and ticks and all that kind of stuff. The brain says, oh, we're learning. We need new neuronal connections. So that's something that we can also do, which is important, isn't it? So that's the lot, I think, isn't it? And my faith is important too, but we're not talking about that at the moment.
Okay, is there an E on the end of sledge or not?
Yes, the beginning and the end is the social engagement.
Okay.
And everything needs to be within the context of social engagement, not withdrawing and shutting oneself away and not talking to anyone or doing anything.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you. These are just great tips. I think it's so important for people to understand what can really lift you up, and everything that has been said so far, in my mind, is good for anybody at any age in life, in any stage of life. Ginger, go ahead.
Speaking of any age, I'm 86. I could have, said, well, don't just relax and forget the whole thing. I've earned it. But you know what? Just like True, I have a passion too. My passion right now and my purpose is writing my memoir. And I just added about 8 pages of tips to caregivers from the perspective of someone who lived with dementia and can talk about it. Because I can describe why I hated showers, why I thought food was lava. It wasn't because I wanted to be mean. And I think if I could give caregivers hope, because they have the toughest job in the world, a hope that their loved one isn't doing this maliciously. Because sometimes, they think they do. My family did. They thought I was malingering, I was malicious. I wasn't. My heart was pure. And it just took a long time. And I'm still working at it. I got ghosted, still working at it. But oh, it's so much better now. It really is. I mean, I have social engagement. I have family in my life now, and life is pretty darn good.
Fantastic. Craig, how about you?
Yeah, when they tell you that they told me you have 8 years to live, here's some prescriptions, get your affairs in order and send you on your way, and then they take away your driver's license. I was a correctional sergeant, so you lose your professional career. It's a huge whammy. So it can send you on a spiraling course down. But I learned to, and I know a lot of people have experienced this. You lose some family members and friends. And I think it's because they don't know how to deal with your symptoms, or they're afraid of what you might say or do. A lot of us lose our filters and say blurt stuff out. So that changes. So I learned to support myself with people like the people in this group here, because they speak your language, they know what you're going through, and they can be very supportive. Also very involved in my church, because they can be very supportive too in a different kind of way, as well as they know what I have, they know what to do. And I play handbells, and when I struggle, I have the minister's daughter right next to me, and she'll help me out with things. And I think it's important to surround yourself with people that will understand and can help you when you are struggling. Because there are days where I'm perfectly normal, and you would think nothing's wrong with me, but there are other days where I can't remember my wife's name. So yeah, I think my point is you support yourself with people that will and can help you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Lori?
I agree with the support. I lead a number of discussion groups with people living with dementia, there's days I get on and I'm not having a good day. I'm struggling, but I look and I see all the smiles and I see all the people that even when they don't say it, they're saying, I'm here for you. I've got your back. And unless it's the people, other people living with dementia that they get it, they understand. And so I can get onto a Zoom when I'm having a bad day. And if I don't feel like talking, I can just sit there and that's okay. If I have questions or, hey, has anybody experienced this? I know that they're going to help me. Somebody in the group is going to say, yes, I've experienced that. And we're going to come up with strategies together. And to me, group support for anyone living with dementia, that is the absolute necessary. You're not going to learn from a doctor of any sorts what you can learn from people who are actually living the experience.
I think that's a really important tip that you just gave, connecting with others and learning from one another. What I have heard from all of you over all the years we've been doing this is, you know, being in a safe place where you can be your authentic self. Everything doesn't have to be a bed of roses, and people understand and share and support and give you great ideas. And no one's out there trying to necessarily, I mean, they want to support you, but they know that they can't always fix it, but they can make it better by doing things. Some tips might fix a problem, but not all the time. And I think sometimes in the medical realm, we want to cure, you know, we want to end this, but there's a lot of middle ground in between getting diagnosed and having a cure. And what you guys are talking about is living life during that middle ground. And I think that's critical. I'm going to go to Craig and then Harry and then to True. So Craig?
One thing I forgot to mention was...
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-494-8310. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-494-8310. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-494-8310.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
I had my idea what happened wrong because we got a cost of living increase through Social Security, and I thought I lost money on my pension because of that, but it wasn't that. What happens when these doctors change your diagnosis is he just changed the wording of it. When I was first diagnosed, there's key words that you have to have in order to get Social Security and Medicare. But now this last neurologist changed the terminology of my diagnosis. Well, Medicaid got word of that and cut my pay, if you want to call it that, or my benefits, $1,300 a month. That's a lot of money. That's more than what I pay for my rent. And when you go grocery shopping, like the other day, and we had just a small cart load of things and nothing exorbitant, it was $179 for his groceries. So it's like we're fighting it. We met with the social worker, I think her title was 2 weeks ago, when they're trying to bring that $1,300 back. And what that was for my wife to be my caregiver. because I can't cook, because I forget that I leave stuff on the stove and forget it's there. I'll put something in the oven and forget it's there. I'll try cutting the grass. I'll try using a snowblower, put my hand down the chute while it's running. And the one day I was operating a circular saw, and something told me to grab that blade while I was spinning. So she's here to watch over me, and that's what that $1,300 was for. But when the doctor changed one word in my diagnosis, Medicaid, Medicare, Medicaid came in and said, "Well, yeah, we're cutting your pay $1,300 a month." So these
That's
doctors
got to
got to
be
be
just,
careful.
yeah, that's got to be just devastating. We have to somehow get our healthcare system looking at a bigger level of wellness, that it's not just a diagnosis. I mean, everything is ticked to one thing to another thing, because I'm sure they had no idea that that was going to happen. And what a battle. And you hear that from many people when things change like that. So thank you for sharing that, Craig.
Well, we called that doctor back, and he said, "Well, I think there's probably some work that you can do." And I said, "If you look back in my records, the first two neurologists said that you cannot work because when you're under the pressure of work, any type of work, your symptoms are going to get greater and multiply. So what you did was completely screwed up my life. Now I don't know if I can afford to live where I'm living." It was, yeah, these doctors don't, I don't think they have the whole picture, like you said, about what can happen with the change of two words.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. I'm going to go to Harry next, and then I'm going to go to Creaky. I said I was going to go to True, but True, I'm going to wait because we've heard from you a little bit. We haven't heard from Harry and Creaky yet. So, Harry?
You're a good juggler.
I'm taking notes.
I try to lead my life and my teaching by example. And so many people that gets diagnosed, they think they can't do things. They think they can't learn new things. Well, I try to lead by example by learning new things. And like, I got into 3D printing. Now, I was a printer all my life, so I know what printing is, but I had trouble. So a friend of mine, her grandson, which is 14 years old, he taught me how to use my 3D printer. And I loved it. Now, you might need assistance in your learning curve. And don't be afraid to ask for help. Like, here I am, almost 78 years old, and I had a 14-year-old kid show me how to do something. Well, a lot of times you won't accept that help, but you have to. You have to learn new things. Don't let now, if it's unsafe, or if it gets you agitated, of course somebody has to come in and stop you from doing it. But don't let anybody tell you you can't do something. And I always say, well, you can do it, but I might need help. Like with my woodworking, I love woodworking, but I thought I'd have to give up my woodworking because it's unsafe to use the power tools I had. So instead of giving up my love of woodworking, I just modified it. I do smaller things, and I get the same joy out of it. That's why we keep saying, your life doesn't stop when you get diagnosed. Actually, my point of view is it's only starting, because if I didn't have dementia, I wouldn't have learned the things in the past 20 years, what I know now, because I wouldn't have had the incentive to do it.
Well, that's a great point. Great point. Thanks, Harry. Karen?
Yes, that's me. Yeah, so hard with words, hard following, but I reread the topic, how I live with dementia after 10 years. And pretty much everybody has said a little of everything that I do. It's not everything, especially the power tools and stuff. But having a purpose is my biggest thing. And the next biggest thing is having gratitude. I live by my, I hate to say it, but I'm going to say it, bathroom routine, morning routine, you know, got to get up. I got to go to the bathroom. And so on my mirror, I have a bunch of really cool mantras or affirmations. That is how I start the day, period, every day, 6 a.m., and the gratitude, you know, the more gratitude I have, the more I have to be grateful for is one of my favorite ones. And it's so true because I can focus on the negative stuff, which is what I did when I was diagnosed. My dad was in late stage Alzheimer's and I got diagnosed with the same thing. I knew nothing about dementia, knew nothing other than the late stage, the unable to talk, the nursing homes, you're dead. Kind of thing. And it wasn't until I don't know how long it took for me to even admit that I had the, you know, problem was to get into Dementia Mentors. Mike Bellevue was the one that he was the computer dude and got me into Dementia Mentors. And here, there's Lori and True, you know, I mean, and they were all laughing when I came in and I was suicidal, literally. I mean, I had the plan, I had everything, I was just a mess. They were all laughing. I'm like, I do not belong here. And they all stopped and they all surrounded me, you know, and I'm still part of that organization. It's just great because there is life after diagnosis. And so the routine, the gratitude, the support groups, helping others, piano. I had a full scholarship back in the 50 years ago. And knew how to play pretty well. And I had recently a lithium toxicity, which put me in the hospital a year and a half ago. I came out of that in bed and not able to use my cell phone. Worse, I have to write everything down. I didn't know which little cue thing was my button to push where I'm supposed to wake up and eat and all that stuff. Didn't know how to use my cell phone. I didn't know how to play my piano. And it's not a miracle or anything like that, but that routine that I had of going to support groups, that routine of listening, you know, I didn't fall in depression. I had this image of this is nursing home material. That's what my thought was. But then it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to do this and this. I just got back into the routine. And so I'm really grateful for that. Staying in my own hula hoop. I have a tendency, I love helping others and family and, you know, but it has to be for the right reason. It can't be used to when I was growing up, it was for love and attention because I didn't have that. And now it's like, but I also have to remember to love myself. I'm backed up on paperwork. My end of life stuff isn't all done because I'm doing other things. So I need to balance my time between doing my stuff, which is very necessary, and doing others. I have a backup brain, my bub. That's Kate Swaffer's nickname for her husband. And her name is Kate. And she is the person that helps me with finances and stuff. And I also have home health, a care partner, 5 hours, three times a week, which is so hard for somebody living alone. But I do it because she tethers me to the paperwork that I need to do that I don't do because I don't have forward thinking, if that makes any sense. So I need some structure. So also with groups, I would go into a group and I'm in AA and other groups and stuff. What I've learned instead of judging or commenting or getting riled up is just to listen, take what I like and leave the rest. I don't need to judge it. I don't need to comment. just if it works for me, fine. If it doesn't, that's okay too. Thank you.
Those were great. Thank you very much. I love your hula hoop piece. And because it's talking about that self-care, which I think sometimes gets overlooked by people. True, did you have something that you wanted to say? And then I'll go to Lori.
Go ahead and skip me.
Okay, Lori?
I want to piggyback on something Harry was saying, and that was thinking I can. Through my career, I did a lot of sales and motivational training, and my favorite thing to use in sales training was the little engine that could. And throughout my life, since I've been diagnosed, I continue to use the little engine that could, because I think we all need to sometimes, when we think, oh, I can't do this today, we need to be like the little engine and go, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, I know I can, I know I can, to get ourselves moving. And I think when we encourage ourselves, we maybe can't do everything we want to do, but I think we can do a lot more when we give ourselves the little push and say, I can do this, and motivate ourselves to do it. Like Harry saying, he didn't think he could learn new things, and look at him, with a little help, with a little encouragement. He's doing many new things and running groups and just doing a fantastic piece. But it needs to be, we need to be saying, I can do this. I can do this. That's all.
Thank you. Harry, you had your hand up?
Yeah. What? I don't want to brag, but I reached out, and I'm an ambassador for an Italian group called Sentimento. And here's a book that I'm in. And I met these Italian people, oh gosh, I don't know, maybe 7-8 years ago. And they were interested in my writings. They started to follow me on Facebook. And that's when I was doing a lot of writing on Facebook. And she asked me if I would write a passage on a book she's writing. And I said, sure. So I did. And several months later, she got in touch with me again, and she said that a group of them were coming to the United States. They would like to visit me. And I said, oh, wonderful. So they came and visit, and they brought the book with them. Now, the book was in Italian. I don't speak Italian. You know, so I'm not sure what they had to say about me in there, but they come visit me every year. And they've done that now for the past, like I said, 7 years. Now, during COVID, they missed a year, but I can understand that. But I'm also an ambassador for the Purple Angels in the United Kingdom. And just because you have dementia, reach out, you know, give back. You know, it's so important for us to give back. And that's why I try to lead my life by example. I try to help people. My one motto is that whenever I'm speaking, I try to get the message of hope across. That's step one. If you don't have hope, it's going to be a tough journey. And it's amazing. I was in a conversation with somebody from India. This is a couple of years back now. And he was telling me that he wanted to learn how to start up a memory cafe. And so I was giving him some examples. And he told me that there was a woman in his village that got stoned to death because, now this is modern time, this is like, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, because they thought she was demented, you know, and she had dementia.
Yeah, that's still real common in Africa, yeah.
you know, it's hard to believe, but once you expand your horizon and get to talking to people in other countries, you start to realize that, Harry, you're living a good life. You know, and I've been blessed with that. And I think I'm still alive because I still have something to give. And as long as I have something to give, then I'm going to do it.
Wonderful, Harry. You've had such a big impact. We should call out your Facebook group, Forget Me Nots. You've got a bunch of subcategories with that too for different types of groups that have helped so many people all around the world. So thank you for that. I'm going to go to Ginger because she had her hand raised and then back to True. Ginger, did you have a comment?
Oh, I guess I love what Harry said about reaching out and give and creaky with gratitude. I was lying there in hospice dying, and my life is so much better now. I'm advocating, and I think that's really important. I'm reaching out to every single resource I could possibly do, just keeping out. There are so many beyond GAA. There's like the villages, there's next door, there's Peninsula Family Service, all of them I've reached out, and they've been wonderful. They've been so incredibly supportive. It's out there, folks. It's just the people that, if we reach out, we get the responses that can be really helpful in the dementia community, that people can know truly that there is hope. And gratitude and all those good things that we're getting because we are reaching out.
In the memory cafes, if people are looking for those, they can go to the memorycafedirectory.com, and that's broken down in person to virtual groups as well. But like DAA, I don't even know how many different types of groups you guys have, Lori, with DAA, from Dementia in the Arts that I know we're working with in terms of doing our Arts and Dementia as Well program, where we interview people, but where people can post their artwork and things there. But you have, you tell people some of the different groups just to give them ideas of what's available.
We have a lot. Right now, we have 5 virtual engagement programs per week. In February, we're going to reduce those to 2 per week. So every Tuesday and Thursday, we'll have a virtual engagement, which is like music beat and trivia, poetry, all kinds of exciting stuff. Then we have every Tuesday afternoon, we have drop in with DAA, which is just kind of, we get together and talk about our week, talk about symptoms and try and help each other and support each other. Every Thursday, we have dementia discussions, which is topic based. And we come up with some really good topics. We talked one time about anosognosia. We talk about sleep disorders, and we have guest specialists. In February, I forget the date, but in a few weeks, we have Dr. Brian Appleby, who's a neurologist, is going to be coming onto the discussion and talking about why is it so hard to get a real diagnosis. So that's going to be kind of an exciting topic I'm looking forward to. But then every Friday we have Faith, Hope, and Love, which is using your spirituality to help you with your challenges. In addition to that, we have Dementia Men, Dementia Women, and we kind of keep a pretty active schedule. So if you're interested, just go to daanow.org and you can enroll in any programs you want. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Creaky?
Yes, I'm just wondering, I don't do computers anymore, or really, and what I struggle with when I meet somebody new or somebody's asking, because I attend DAA and the, you know, other groups and stuff, but is there, I like to just Google dementia groups on Zoom. Is there an algorithm, or is there a directory for all the different groups that are available and the links to get to them, or a phone number to get to them? How do you find these groups?
I used to have a listing of the ones that I knew of on my blog, but that's, I can't do my blog anymore, so it's not been updated.
Right. I'm just wondering. I hear you. I used to love your blogs. I used to read them all the time. Is there a way for a person that's just got diagnosed to go online, you know, and type in available groups? I mean, do we have something like that?
There
if not,
really,
we need something like that.
There really isn't. You know, we started Dementia Map, and one of them, you know, has groups that people can put in. But so often the groups are run by volunteers, and so that never gets done because they're so stretched. And so what I have heard from everybody is it's getting into a group, and once you're in a group, you hear of other groups. And it's but there just isn't a good spot to really go anywhere for yeah. in you know inclusive support. And again, Dementia Map is a start.
Yeah.
And everyone who has a group, we've got like 150 different categories. Anyone who has has a support can list theirs for free. You know, we vet them and things, but so it doesn't have to be a cost to do that, but it's just directing people to put their information out there so people can find them, because it is extremely difficult. True, you had your hand up, and so did Lori.
So far, all we've mentioned was groups, and groups can be extremely, extremely important, because being able to see the person move and see their eyes while they're talking. But also, some people have a real hard time doing video camera things. And there's books that Jennifer has some books out, blogs. I did a blog for as long as I could. And so there are other formats for being able to access things, projects from people living with dementia. You don't have to have a video camera.
Yeah. And also authors, it would be a great resource there too for books. Lori?
To answer Creaky's question, one of the problems is getting on the Google search, and that's very difficult. At DAA, we've tried really hard to get ourselves, so if someone Googles dementia support groups, we pop up. Well, in looking at the way Google has their algorithms, one of the things you need to do is on your main page, you would need to say the words dementia support groups 6 times somehow for that to fall into their algorithm. Well, that's kind of difficult to put on your main page. And then your other alternative, some of the really big dementia places like the Alzheimer's Association and whatever that have a lot of money to throw around, they're paying Google to keep their name going. Well, most of us are nonprofit and we're totally volunteer, and we just don't have the money to keep paying to do that. So I agree with what Lori said. I know I learned about DAA because I started writing stuff on Facebook, and Tipa Snow referred me to DAA, who referred me to Lori LeBay. So I went from Dementia Mentors to DAA to Lori LeBay, and was involved in DAI for a while. I learned all that through other people telling me about it. And I don't know how we could correct that. Dementia Maps is one source, but I don't know how we could correct that unless somebody had lots of money that they started something and didn't charge nonprofits for listing all the stuff and kept calling them and had resources to say, hey, what's your programs for this week? And I'll put them in for you. It's tough.
Yeah, well, and I think it's more than just nonprofits. I mean, we have to have, in my opinion, and that's what Dementia Map tries to do, is have nonprofits, for-profits, government agencies, and then people that don't even see themselves as a resource, people living with dementia who maybe have written a book or have a blog or a YouTube channel or a group, sometimes they don't see themselves as an organization, so they don't think that they belong, but they definitely belong in there. But it's getting people listed. And again, the time and the money and the effort makes it complicated. Creaky, go ahead.
I hear what everyone's saying. I understand that. It's frustrating for me, who used to, you know, program. I was a computer programmer and graphics, you know, all that kind of stuff. When somebody comes to me, do you think I have dementia? And, you know, so I know DAA and I know, you know, dementia mentor, you know, those kind of things, but the contacts, how do they, maybe they can't even type anymore. Maybe they just need a phone up, you know, so I'm frustrated and I understand it's a big global thing and there's really probably not an answer, but I know word of mouth really helps. I'm not able to pass that on like I would like to, like what saved me, you know, by getting this information.
The voice recognition would be helpful, but the algorithms are constantly changing no matter what it is. And so again, that's really, really hard to keep up. We just need to close up here. So I'm just going to open it up. I know Harry had one last comment. If anyone else does, please raise your hand and it will pull you in and then we will call it a wrap.
See, the problem we have is a lot of older people don't have computers. Okay. Or if they do have them, they don't know how to use them. Mm-hmm. So I believe we need a centralized places of support in our local area. Like, who cares if there's a wonderful memory cafe in Texas, let's say, or California? I can't go there, you know, so I can't be part of that. So I want to know the groups that are locally here in my area. And I think that's what I try to do. I try to get the local memory cafes. Like every time I have a memory cafe, we go over some of the list of the various memory cafes in different cities in our area, because maybe they can't come to my memory cafe at that time of day, but somebody else has one at a different time that they can come to.
And that's a great point. And I love that you share. I'm going to go to Jennifer because I know that she has to go, and to see if you had any last comment, Jennifer.
No, I just love being here. Thank you so much for organizing us all and getting us all to talk, but I need to go. I live across the pond. It's getting dark, as you can see. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Thank you. True?
When I started dealing with this, there is no local groups here. I live too rural. And so it was Christine Bryden's books. And then Michael Allenboven's book. You know, it was books that brought me in to being able to use, doing it on computer and then being able to access the groups on computer. But there's a lot of people that don't have access to physical groups.
I know the libraries are starting to get a lot more involved. And if your library isn't, a lot of them are starting memory cafes. So that might be something to look into too. Creaky?
Just real quickly, the video, all that kind of stuff. We all have these 1-800 numbers call, or 988, or the suicide lines and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if there could be some kind of deal with, like a 1-800 dementia support, you know, that kind of a thing. And then from that, you know, who runs the database, whether it's, you know, somebody like Alzheimer's or to support that or whatever, but just have one number and then that can be filtered down to the states or videos or phone calls or, you know, surely there's something they can come up with, because I'm no longer able to give that information. I get all tongue tied. And so anyway. Thanks.
Yeah, that is still a difficult one to do, because you've got to feed everything in and you've got to have the money and the structure to do it. And then it has to be, in my opinion, inclusive. And that's been part of the problem with a lot of different resource directories is the judgment of what you need or what you need or, you know, and I think families need to be able to have that choice. Lori?
I'm glad that Harry has memory cafes around where he lives. Where I live, I haven't yet met a cow with dementia. So, and I am very much in the country. But I also think when I lived in Pennsylvania, the Alzheimer's Association had a dementia group about an hour from me. But the way they treated people with dementia was horrible, because they had the people, the caregivers were in one room actually learning or talking, and the people with dementia were in coloring or, I don't want to be treated like that. So it's important. I mean, first off, you may not have memory cafes or groups near you, but if you do, it's important. If you go to one and you go, I don't like this, don't give up. Don't give up. Try for something different. They're not all the same, and depends on who's running them. Sometimes some of the groups will allow. Some of the groups encourage people living with dementia and their care partners to be together. Other groups will do it, well, half the time you're together and half the time you're not. Some groups understand that us living with dementia are not necessarily uneducated, or we still can understand many times, even when we can't respond, we can understand what's going on. And some groups don't get that. So I guess I'm just saying, if you go to one virtual support group and you don't like it, don't say, I don't like this, try another. If you go to one memory cafe and you don't like it, don't quit there. Keep trying.
With that, we're going to wrap up here. What a great conversation. Thank you all for your insights. Oh my gosh, what a wealth of information. So for our audience, you know, be a giver of hope. Like, click, and share this so other people can get some hope under how people live past 10 years with dementia. And as you can see, they're all living a good life and they're all purposeful and they're all giving back. And you can be one of those people too. In fact, you can join us here on Dementia Chats as well. You know, just reach out to me at Lori, L-O-R-I, at AlzheimerSpeaks.com. And we will pull you into the group. Thank you all again. Can't wait until next month. Bye now.
Hi, everyone. This is Meredith from the Senior Fitness with Meredith podcast, where I discuss all things for seniors, from fitness, your health and wellness journeys, how to be all over strong and beyond. I also have my mini podcast called Motivation with Meredith. It's a great, quick, motivational pick-me-up for your days. Join me. Listen now. Search for Senior Fitness with Meredith on your favorite podcast platform.